listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Once again, Paul, a beautiful day, July 25th.
We're back. We're back and we're bigger than ever. Yeah. I'm telling you.
How tall are we?
What? And you know what? It is not like the surface of the sun out there for the first time in I don't know how long.
It's only 92 today.
It's only 92, yeah. Yes. My father moved to Arizona. Did I tell you that?
No.
He moved to Arizona and he said, they said, yeah, but it's the dry heat. You know, it's the dry heat. And his response was, yeah, and so is the friggin' convection oven. That was his response to it. Let's start off by thanking our folks, shall we?
Yes, of course we shall. Would you like me to start that off? We'd like to thank,
ladies and gentlemen.
Would you mind? Not at all. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit them at breakdownexpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar. Very grateful for them. Let's throw them some applause, shall we?
Yeah, of course.
As I get my applause going. There we go. So, joining us in studio, full day today, Michael, full day. Joining us in studio today, a young lady that both Michael and I had the pleasure of seeing on stage in the current smash hit, the Pantages Theater, the most beautiful theater in Los Angeles, as far as I'm concerned. Sister act in the role of Dolores. She delivers a truly divine performance. We're blessed to have her with us today. Please welcome Taria Campbell. Hey, how are you?
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Absolutely.
Enjoyed the show. We'll talk to her shortly.
Also, Paul, today with us, he has starred as Danny McGuire and Zeus in Doma's production of Xanadu. And now he's returning to the Met Theater in Hollywood in the plum role of Guido Cantini in their acclaimed production of Nine. Please welcome David Michael Trevino.
David, how are you?
Thank you. I'm doing
nice
well.
To meet you, David.
Good to meet you.
Thanks for joining us.
Yes,
very
good.
Did I just say your name, your last name right? Trevino or Trevino?
Trevino.
Oh, okay.
Trevino. It's got, what is it, Tilda?
Tilda?
Is that what
right.
it is?
The Tilda.
The Tilda.
The Tilda.
The Waltzing the Tilda. Yes, exactly.
This show on Broadway, Tilda.
Was it? Yeah. It gives it that, I call it the gnocchi end, because it's the same thing in Italian when you say gnocchi. It's got that little...
You would know.
Yeah. I use the layman's term. And in a moment, via the electric telephone, we'll meet another guest whose hit show, Keith Moon, The Real Me, is currently one of the hottest tickets in San Francisco. But we will talk to him shortly and introduce him at the time that he joins us on the air. But first, Michael, how was your week?
Super.
Yes?
As always, blessed with, being busy, going out and supporting the arts, and the beautiful production of Sunset Boulevard, which is down at the Musical Theater West, being, if you're familiar with that, it's one of our great regional theaters here, has done the 20th anniversary of the show.
Wow.
Can you imagine 20 years have passed?
Yeah.
And so
I know 20 years has passed because I saw it when I was 8. So
did you?
Eddie, that's a tough room. Tough room, I tell you. But 20 years, that is amazing.
David Burnham, Valerie Perry starring in the show. Beautiful, beautiful performances. Sold out, and it closes this Sunday. So that we're excited about. And another show that is coming up this week, I really can't say the title on air. I can say most of it, and I'm going to let you all figure it out.
Okay.
It's called Women Are Crazy Because Men Are...
Rhymes with sasspole. Is that okay? Good way to put it?
Something like that.
Yes, yes, okay.
But the truth of the matter is, it's a very cool, hip, trendy show about two people who have a four-month relationship on the internet, a dating relationship on the internet only, and then finally meet in front of all of their collective friends at a brunch.
Okay.
Everything comes loose from
everything,
that
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds fun.
It is.
And where's that playing?
That is at the Matcha Theater in West Hollywood.
The Matcha Theater?
Matcha.
Matcha, okay.
Yes.
You said matcha.
As in man of.
A man of La Matcha, yes. The little known bakery in Spain. That sounds great. That sounds great.
George Pinocchio and I did a thing together last night on the show, and that's going to be on the 11 o'clock news tonight. So I'm very excited to see
the
show.
Oh, cool. My week was good, but I'm actually going, since we have so many guests today, yes. I'm going to just immediately go to them because we could spend as much time with them as possible.
Absolutely.
Well, Michael, do me a favor. Would
yes,
you
sir.
And would you read, while I fiddle with my electronics here, would you read Mick's intro for us while I fiddle with the phones here?
Yes, exactly. Great. Exactly, I will. And rather than introduce our first guest, I will share. Is that what you want me to read? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I will share what Robert Hurwitz, of the San Francisco Chronicle had to say about him. He brings Keith Moon's deceptively anarchic, isn't I saying that right?
Yeah.
Yes, anarchic,
okay. Yeah.
But tightly controlled artistry to life in one classic by The Who after another. They are exhilarating reproductions. What Mr. Berry does best is show us why Keith Moon was the most important drummer of his generation and why that matters. Please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, via telephone from San Francisco, playwright and star of Keith Moon, the real me, Mick Berry.
Mick, how are you?
Hey, all right.
We hope
what a greeting. That's fantastic.
Hope we liked your intro music. We've had that sound clip from The Who, which it really annoys me that they have that listed on the computer as CSI, because it's not a CSI sound clip. It's a Who sound clip.
It's pretty aggravating, isn't it?
Yes. Who knew? Mick, I know you don't have a lot of time. You got a lot of plates spinning over there, but I wanted to thank you for joining us via the phone for however briefly to talk about Keith Moon, the real me. I know that you're an accomplished drummer. I know that you've got a best-selling book about drumming, The Drummer's Bible, and I'm always curious about when someone does a one-person show about someone so acclaimed, in Keith Moon's case, for his drumming. Was your fascination with Keith Moon born before you were a drummer, or did you develop more of appreciation for him after you heard him play?
Oh, definitely afterwards, simply because I started playing much younger than I became in the age in which I became familiar with The Who. Though I didn't even start playing until I was 13. That was back in 1970. But I'd heard I Can See for Miles, a few other hits by The Who, and thought, oh, nice songs. I started playing drums, and then when I was 16, the album Quadrophenia came out, and that was that.
Within
2 weeks, they were my favorite rock band and have been so ever since.
Yeah, Quadrophenia is a game changer. Quadrophenia is their Sgt. Pepper, I like to say. I think that's the...
Well, you know, those three albums back-to-back, Tommy, Who's Next, and Quadrophenia, no other group, including the Beatles, has put out three albums back-to-back like that.
No, that's true.
I mean, the Beatles had the White Album and then Abbey Road. And those are two masterpieces, but those three, Tommy, Who's Next, and Quadrophenia, it's amazing. And what's particularly incredible is that most of the songs are written by one guy,
yes.
Pete Townsend.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Now, this is a one-man show that you're doing, but you have other musicians up there to sort of help you along. Is that correct?
Right. Well, we've got a live band to play all the songs, and the live band has been directed by The Who's own Frank Symes, who's a resident of L.A. Since I'm up in San Francisco, we managed to work things out just before he went on tour with the European leg of the Quadrophenia tour in June and the beginning of July. We worked with him, and he's the musical director of the show with the live band, and I've got great musicians in the band. Rick Wilson, who subs for Huey Lewis, Jesse Scott, who's played with the Tokyo Symphony, and then Jeff Lavis on keyboards, who is the keyboardist on Moondance by Van Morrison.
Oh, wow. And you have the blessing of the whole of the Moon family on this, and you've had correspondence with Pete Townsend on this. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
Oh, that's
great. I wouldn't be on the radio if I didn't. Be trying to go under the radar. But this is, it's definitely with the approval of Pete and Mandy, who's another resident of the beautiful city of Los Angeles.
Oh, wow. No, it's just, I saw the clips online. I want to throw the URL out there. This is KeithMoonTheRealMe.com. This is the show that's going on. It's at the Eureka Theater at 215 Jackson Street in beautiful San Francisco. And once again, we're talking to Mick Berry. The show is directed by Bobby Wineapple. Is that correct?
That's right.
And the musical direction by Frank Symes, you said, and... I encourage people to go online and to check out the website and just sort of learn a little bit about it, because he really is one of the most unique musical talents of a generation. I mean, you could talk about you can talk about Ringo and you can talk about Charlie Watts, and they're both phenomenal drummers and great timepieces. But Keith Moon just brought something to drumming that I don't think anyone else from that generation did. I'm sure you would agree with me.
Paul, and
yeah, there was a fire there and an activity expressing it that's unparalleled.
Very much so. Michael, I'm sorry.
How long does the show play?
Yes. How long is the show running for?
Well, we have just announced we are extending through August 18th.
Oh, that's great. So
yeah, we had extended through August 4th. Now, today I found out from people involved in the production that we're going to be able to go through August 18th, possibly beyond, but at least August 18th.
So remember the August 18th, and we just got the news just now. So thank you so much. Mick, we have to get to our two in-studio guests, but thank you so much for joining us on the air. The website again, KeithMoonTheRealMe.com. The show is Keith Moon, The Real Me, written and performed by Mick Berry. Mick, thank you so much for joining us. We're very grateful.
Thank you, Paul and Michael. And Highway 5 makes it a 4 to 5 hour drive, depending on how legal you are about it.
Okay. Very so don't nice. Take a cab, is what you're saying. Don't take a cab. Thank you,
okay.
Mick.
Thank
All
you,
right.
sir.
Thanks
Bye.
So much.
Bye-bye.
Nice guy.
Very nice.
Great show. Heard great things about it through Chris Meehan, friend of ours.
Oh, really?
Been on the air.
So he's they're friends, Chris?
A number of times, yes. Yeah, the number of times that Chris has seen it, because Chris is up in San Francisco mm-hmm. quite a bit. His family's up there.
Nice.
But
nice.
Thank you for both for your patience. And let's Absolutely. Join Michael. Give the lovely lady
right,
to your left the intro she is aptly due.
Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is best known for starring as Nala in The Lion King on Broadway and national tour. Other Broadway credits include Leap of Faith, original cast, The Book of Mormon, original cast, along with Aida and Little Shop of Horrors. She was awarded the Gold Medal for Excellence in Acting after receiving her degree in theater from Marymount Manhattan College, and is currently raising the roof at the Pantages in the lead role of Dolores Van Cartier. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the star of Sister Act, please welcome Taria Campbell.
Taria.
Thank you for having me.
How are you?
You make me sound so important.
You are important.
Taria, we're just holding up the cards that you read. That's all.
You're just reading what I told you to say.
And I love the way she looks. She's so California girl today.
Well, thank you.
And lovely print dress.
We were speaking out in the lobby before the show started, and I was sharing with Taria how much my... my niece, Damaris, who came to see the show,
how much
she enjoyed it. And she was, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where you know someone's enjoying the show. You know, 13-year-olds, for most of the time, are just too cool for school.
Yes.
You know, they're just, you're never really going to know what they're digging, you know. And if she could have leapt up onto her seat to applaud, she would have. She was cheering. She was, everything was just like
a
little.
Oh, thank you, Damaris.
She was, she's a little, just was really... could not have loved it more. First of all, going into the Pantages, as we said, it's a beautiful venue.
It's so beautiful.
And she took all these pictures while she could before the show started. Yeah. And then, but she really dug it. And in no small part to your performance, you really just, it's really astonishing how you just sort of, we were saying about you being the hub of the wheel in that show. And that's, how is that for you? I mean,
you know, it is a lot of pressure. You know, there's a lot of pressure to really sort of keep the show going, as it were. But I work with the most amazing cast, the ensemble, the rest of the principals. Everyone is so amazing. Everyone is a star in their own right. And so I'm so blessed to work with such a great group of people that really, they really do keep the machine going. Yeah. You know, I have all the numbers in the big costumes, but the people that I work with, they are stars.
You know, and Michael, we both saw it. You saw it before I did. But what really stood out to me about this is that, you know, so much of the time when you see a musical that's based on a film, an established film, you're like, okay, they're going to take the film and it's just going to have, you know, more songs and they're going to sing more of the dialogue than they actually speak. But this was so, I want to say it was different, but it was different in a good way. It was sort of like this nice, honorable nod to the film.
Yes.
But it didn't cling to the film closely.
Yeah,
you know?
It's all new music written by Alan Menken, who, you know, wrote The Little Mermaid and Little Shop of Horrors and Leap of Faith and, you know, Beauty and the Beast. And so it's all new music written by him, and none of the music from the movie that you might think that you would recognize is in the play. And so the play is also set in the 1970s, unlike the movie, which was set in 1992. So that lends itself to a more funky sort of genre of music. You know, you have the great horn section, you have the nods to the OJs and the Bee Gees, and you know, it's great music, and it's more theatrical. So I think that was very smart of them to, you know, set the play in that era, which also lends for more sequins, bigger bell bottoms, and bigger hair. So who doesn't love that? So it's really great. It is, like you said, it is a nod, and it's taking a page off of it. But once the show starts, you totally forget that it was a movie. It takes you to a different place.
That didn't occur to me. I didn't realize that the time for Sister Act, the film, so long ago, but I didn't realize that the time change, that it had been, you know, the 70s rather than 1992.
And set in Philadelphia rather than Las Vegas. And I am from Philadelphia, so that's extra special to me.
Oh, okay.
So it's a joy every night to be able to utter the first line of the show, which is, "Hello, Philadelphia." So that's just, you know, I get a little every time I say
that's
it.
That's great. That's great.
And the score really is a very good score. It's a rousing score, as we're talking about. And that's so great, again, compared to the movie, because I think a lot of people that walk into the theater aren't, even though they might know a little bit about the show having seen the film, they're probably expecting to hear some of the film music.
And for me, and I have nothing, it's not a deficiency of the film.
Not at all.
Of the film, I mean. But they did sort of have to hobble, you know, songs to fit. I mean, of course, My God instead of My Guy and all
right.
Which was, you know, fun, but so much nicer to hear the original material. And it also takes it out of the world of jukebox musical.
Yes.
It sort of makes it its own thing, which was so nice to experience.
Really Paul did. Brought up something about how was it for you to get through a show like this, you know, on tour and do so many performances on a weekly basis. I always think this of singers, especially of your caliber, that have your kind of a voice, which, you know, goes from the stage to the last row up there in the balcony for sure.
Amazing sound department.
Yeah, she's the fragile little flower, that Taria. Just whispery, just a breathy voice.
Yeah. No, but I mean, your vocal cords are muscles. It's your instrument. It's your living. You really have to treat yourself like an athlete.
Yeah, it really is important to make sure that you are prepared. You know, I'm basically living 22 hours of my life based on 2 hours of my life. You know, 2.5 hours of my life. I have to be at a certain level, and so the rest of the day really does need to reflect, you know, what I have to do, you know, working out or eating right or not doing the bad things for our voice, like drinking and smoking and all that other kind of stuff. It's really important to sort of keep your body up, because it is a muscle, and I'm not a robot. And so
do you regulate the time you go to bed every night?
No, I don't do that, because after after the show I'm pretty wired, but I make sure that, you know, I'm not out in the streets, Michael.
But David is nodding fervently to that.
I'm definitely home, you know, at a certain time, and I'm definitely in bed, you know, by 12 or 1. But the end of the evening is the easy part. It's the beginning of the day. You know, when am I going to go to the gym? When am I going to eat so that I'm not so full, that my costumes don't feel good, and that I can move? And when am I going to go and run on the treadmill so that I'm warm, you know?
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that used to drive me crazy. I was mentioning this one-man show that I did for a long time, and it used to drive me crazy when people would say, you only work, you work 2 hours. It's like, you don't understand. The whole day, it's like, if you work in an office, you can be tired.
Yeah.
You can, you know, you cannot be fully there. You have to deliver every night in that 2 hours. Like you said, I love the way you put it. The whole day is geared to that 2 hours.
Yeah.
And we could get really biologically mechanical about this if we wanted to, but we're talking about regulating everything about your day.
Of course.
Yes.
You're
out, you know. Yeah, and, you know, it is this role, although it's amazing, it's a very exposed role. You know, there's no hiding behind anything else. If you're not feeling 100% being in your voice or your body, it's best to not do the show, because you don't want to injure yourself.
Right.
You know, that's like if you're a runner and you have, you know, sort of a sore knee or sort of a pulled, you know, muscle, you don't want to go run a marathon, because you're going to do more damage. So that's also hard to really make wise decisions, because what you do today affects how you'll be able to do the rest of the show. And it's better to take one show off than to get injured and have to take a week off. Exactly. You know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah. And I think a lot of the young people who only see sort of the glitz and the glamour of doing a show don't realize that it is hard physical work. Michael, you work a lot with the young performers when mm-hmm. you do the LA's Next Great Stage Star. Do you find that they're fully aware of what it means to go into the trenches? I mean, how many performances a week are you doing?
We do 8 performances a week. I do 8 performances a week. Okay. And it's 2 on Saturday and 2 on Sunday. And we have a day off, which is on Monday.
Wow.
But sometimes on a tour, your day off is also your travel day.
Right.
Mm. So that is the day that you are getting up early to make a plane, you know, getting your luggage and going to the next place, traveling however many miles, be it by plane or by bus. And going and getting yourself settled in a new city, having an evening off, but then starting all over with the sound check the next day on Tuesday afternoon.
Wow, two show days back to back for this show. That's got to be like, that has to be like running a marathon.
Yes, but please come see it.
Yeah.
It's really good. We have, Saturday and Sunday, you know.
And I want to stress, too, because although we are talking about this and how grueling it can be, we should also stress that never for a second during this performance do you see one shred of that, because she just burns the place down.
It's
all energy. And you know what I liked about this, Michael, and we had a difference of opinion on the show that we saw at the Pantages, which was Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Mm-hmm. You enjoyed it, I didn't enjoy it as much,
right.
But what I loved about this show is that it is full energy and full just very, very powerful a musical production, but there are such subtleties in this. There are some smaller performances. The people are not afraid to be subtle and give the audience enough credit that the audience will find them on the journey. I noticed that a great deal with the wonderful Hollis Resnick, who plays Mother Superior.
She's amazing.
I mean, fantastic.
Yeah. And just what she does in some of the smaller moments. Of course, Taria has those moments as well, but the way the show's written...
her character is written as, you know, she's the Mother Superior. She's stoic, she's firm, she's, you know, reserved, you know, a large presence, but, mm-hmm. you know, very reserved. But Hollis is such an amazing actress that she is able to belie that and appear, you know, her personality and her acting ability just, you know, she is a force. Mm-hmm. And you see that even with a role that could be seen as a reserved role. You know, many other actresses might play it in a different way, mm-hmm. to just be quiet, to just blend in, but she makes such strong choices, and it's a joy to be able to share the stage with her and to get that energy from her, because Dolores is very big, is very broad, and, you know, a lot of other actresses could play that one way also, mm-hmm. but what I enjoy about this role immensely is that I get to have that vulnerable moment. I get to have that diva moment. I get to have that comedic moment. It's a brilliant part, and it's a brilliant part to be able to explore all of those things. And, and for Mother Superior, I'm sure she feels the same way as well.
Yeah, and with what you were saying about her performance and the smaller things that she's able to do, just like an actress could play them all small, she could also be doing a parody of the Mother Superior too, just the real, you know, ruler thrashing, staunch sort
the
of...
The one I remember in my personal life.
Oh, I'm not saying they didn't exist.
Oh, were you bad?
I'm not saying they didn't exist, but you don't want to watch that for 2 hours,
see,
2.5 hours. Are they? Yeah. You get in a lot of trouble, Michael?
No. But when I did, that's what they did.
They don't play around.
They took that ruler, and man, your knuckles burned for days after.
Yeah.
But I really think she finds a way inside of that character that she is human, you know? She is not a parody. She is a real woman with real issues, and Dolores is coming in and disrupting her convent.
Exactly.
She's not a mean woman, so she's not going to... you know, throw a fit and tell her off. She's going to.
Oh, but she has a duty.
Has a duty.
Yeah, right.
And the two of them with the three thugs as
they're
well.
They're amazing.
Oh yeah, that's one of those. That's one of those moments that putting it in the 70s just really makes it work so much better. Because
and that
the way
part was
they
obviously
look,
fleshed out from the movie. You know, that those guys weren't really.
I was gonna say I don't even recall them from the movie.
Exactly,
so,
they were just two or three guys with guns and you know, shiny suits. Mm-hmm. But now this part is really fleshed out, and they have two numbers, and they're just really great.
And they really sell it. It's sort of their number is sort of the Officer Krupke of that
That's
show.
Right.
You know?
That's right. And you know, the other thing too, which I thought was a really, really lovely relationship, was with the male love interest of your character.
Oh, E. Clayton Cornelius,
yes.
He plays Sweaty Eddie.
Charming guy.
Yes, he is a charming guy. Yes. On stage.
Yeah. On stage.
Just kidding, Clay.
There's another. There's another charming guy in Terrio's life, and he's up in Vancouver. His name is Jonathan.
His name is Jonathan Dinklage. Hi, Johnny.
And I hope he's listening.
I hope you are listening in Vancouver. He's touring right now with the band Rush. And he's also the concertmaster at the hit musical Matilda.
Wow.
So I'm so proud of him.
And he's also your
fiance.
What fiances?
What talented kids these two are going to have.
Yeah.
I hope so. Because if they're born without being able to sing or tap a toe, I'm going to be real upset.
Really?
Just kidding.
It's impossible. It has to happen. You know that.
Oh,
carry on the legacy of their mom and dad. Absolutely. So you're having a ball with this. Tell me something. When did you start in this business?
35 years ago. No, I'm just kidding. I started in this business in my hometown of Philadelphia. Yeah. I went to the High School for Creative and Performing Arts, mm-hmm. where I studied theater. And then I graduated and went to Marymount Manhattan College, where I also studied theater and musical theater sort of fell into my lap. I was not a musical theater major or minor at the time that
really?
I went to school. No, I grew up singing in church, and I wanted to be a straight actress. Hmm. You know, I just wanted to do plays and be dramatic, you know. And as a kid, you know, I loved Annie, and I loved Little Shop of Horrors, and I used to sing The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow in front of my steps. And if you wanted to get up the steps, you had to pay me a quarter.
Doing business. So you studied marketing.
Yes, I was an entrepreneur as a young kid. And my sister and mother and brother used to, you know, hate it because I was just screaming at the top of my lungs, which I thought I was belting. You know, that was my training. But I didn't have any training as a singer for quite some time. And I auditioned for the musical in my college as a dare. And the rest is sort of history. The musical theater chair asked me to, you know, be in the program. She said, "We don't have anybody like you. Come be in this program." I'm like, "I don't have time, you know. I'm BFA acting, and I have, you know, so many credits, you know, already allotted." And she was a wonderful woman named Pat Simon, and she allowed me to audit a lot of the classes, and I sort of fell in love with musical theater and really started to consider it as a profession. And as soon as I graduated, I got my equity card and I did a musical, and I've been working ever since. I'm so blessed. I know that this is a tough profession, and
sure.
you know, 90% of actors are unemployed, and so I'm constantly thinking about how blessed I am, and I never take this for granted. This is such a wonderful way to make a living, and I love it every day. It never gets old, and I'm so happy.
Well, you sound very, very grateful, and it's nice to hear.
And to think that of all, and I appreciate what you just said, but to think of all the people, you must think of all the people that you are also making happy.
Yeah, I do, and I think that I always think when I'm doing the show that this is someone's first time at the theater. This is someone's gateway to something that could change their lives forever, like mm-hmm. it changed my life.
Sure.
And
mm-hmm.
so when I'm up on stage doing those performances, there's no room to not be full out, you know? I love it so much that I don't want to not be full out, you know? I want to give the performance that I saw when I was young, and I saw Crazy for You for the first time, and I thought, oh my gosh, these people are so amazing. I want to have that feeling, and I want to give that feeling to someone else in the theater.
You mentioned that you sang in church
mm-hmm.
and were not doing it. Have you seen 20 Feet from Stardom, or have you heard of 20 Feet from Stardom?
No, I've never seen it or heard of
you
it.
Know, it's a documentary. It's out right now. Cannot recommend it high enough. But it's about black female backup singers and how so many of them found their origin in church.
Oh, that's amazing.
And how Mary Clayton, who does that killer vocal on Gimme Shelter, the Rolling Stones mm-hmm. song, Gimme Shelter, War Children, that wonderful stepladder
uh-huh.
note.
What was that again?
Sing it
again.
and then, of course, Lisa Fisher, who sang with the Rolling Stones for 18 years.
Oh,
and
I did read
Darlene
about this,
Love.
A review, and I read about a review about
and
it in People Magazine.
It's just about the state of music and musical theater in this country would not be what it is today if not for gospel music.
That's very true.
And all that these women have brought to it. It's an astounding documentary. Be sure to see it. It's called 20 Feet from Stardom. Michael, you tear it up.
I would love to see
it. It's fantastic.
Absolutely.
Very, very good.
And we should tell people how to see Sister Act.
We should tell them how to see that. Yes. You want to?
Yeah, I
go
will.
Right
on
ahead.
Stage now, ladies and gentlemen, through the 28th of July, so you have a chance to see The performance is remaining in this week at the beautiful, beautiful Pantages Theater, 6233 Hollywood Boulevard in Los Angeles.
And there are tons of great seats available left at all price ranges, so please come out.
And it's Tuesday through Friday at 8 p.m., Saturday at 2 and 8 p.m., Sunday at 1 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. So we recommend it, and you know if we love it, then you're going to love it for sure.
And if you miss us here, you can catch us next week in San Diego, or you can catch us the following week for 2 weeks in Costa Mesa.
Right.
But if you don't want to commute, you could just say this one.
Or you could just follow us on tour wherever we go.
And it is the national tour, and we do have a national audience, so make sure that you check out Sister Act on your interweb, as Paul says.
Coming to a city near you.
Yes, exactly. And go to HollywoodPantages.com or Ticketmaster.com or call 1-800-982-2787 for tickets. Or, of course, visit the beautiful Pantages box office, which is open daily at 10 a.m. and all Ticketmaster outlets.
And also, I just want to reiterate, that's, I think, Michael, you said the, just so people know, it's HollywoodPantages.com. Just by itself, HollywoodPantages.com, Ticketmaster. And we will also throw that information out before the end of the hour.
Absolutely.
I'll put that out there one more time.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You're sticking around.
Please stick around. Please stick around and chime in. Where I will introduce our next guest, who just made it under the wire.
Yes.
He's probably been out there for...
in the lobby.
Probably out there for 5 minutes.
Please wait, and we'll come get you. I said, so I waited.
Yeah, he did exactly what he was supposed to. We're in here pulling our hair out, and he's out there having a smoke. I don't know what's going on. Doma Theater Company has carved a name for itself by presenting large-scale Broadway-style musicals in a small, intimate setting at Hollywood's Met Theater. Doma opened the 2013 season with Dreamgirls, garnering rave reviews, including Los Angeles Times Critics' Choice and the Ovation recommendation. They continue this tradition of excellence with their smash hit 9, the musical that explores the passion and pitfalls of an Italian film director grappling with his midlife crisis and creative block. Starring as that conflicted and very busy director, Guido Contini is our next guest. Please welcome David Michael Trevino.
Thank you very much.
Well, there's Trevino.
Good to be here.
Trevino.
Trevino.
Got it right. I'm sorry. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm always curious about this because 9 is a fantastic musical, and it's whenever it's presented, they always precede it by saying the rarely produced 9. Mm. Now, why do you think that is, or do you have an opinion on that? Because
it is rarely produced.
It astounds me that it's not produced more because the songs are infectious. Yeah. It's a great tale. It's sexy. It's funny.
It is actually. I did see the show maybe 10 years ago, and it was in a smaller venue than what we are, and it was so simply put on that it was not memorable for me. So I guess it's just the theatrical production part of it is just you've got to do it right.
People don't want to take that risk.
Well, one thing nice about the Met Theater that you're performing in is that while it is a 99-seat equity waiver facility, the facility itself feels like you have a 300-seat house.
It is. It's nicely raked. Everybody has a clear view.
So
there's no unobstructed
big
seat.
You've seen a number of shows there.
I have. I'm a big fan of their work.
I'm going to go see 9 though because I love that musical.
I'm a big fan of your.
And is it a new venue or has it just been rehabbed
it's been there for a while? For years. Yeah.
Really?
It's just been under the jurisdiction of Doma for the last year and a half, maybe.
I think.
Took it
Doma is the initials of the two co-founders. Doma, the D-O is for Dolph, and M-A is for Marco, who is our director for this production.
And they just do very quality work, so it's so nice to see.
And it's great. You know, you talked about that it's a 99-seat waiver, but, I mean, the staff that they have on hand is, top quality.
Yeah,
you know, the first show I did, like you mentioned, was Xanadu, and I was like, wow,
the orchestra,
sound crew, they've got a great set design crew, and, you know, our music director, I mean, he's like a kid. He's like 20, 22, and here he is, you know, he's got a background from working on Broadway, and he's just like a little genius.
Yeah.
A prodigy.
And I imagine, too, it's got to be interesting to be able to explore little subtleties with a musical like that. Like, you look at something like Sister Act, which just, even in a venue as big as the Pantages, it blows the door off, you know, the back wall off the place. It's just that sort of thing. But something like 9, which if it were played in the Pantages, would have to do that too. What a great opportunity for people to see a musical like that in what constitutes an intimate setting, a 99-seat. And how has that been as a performer? Do you find yourself really having to sort of regulate yourself so it's not like the Maxell tape ad blowing people's hair back.
No,
the...
it's not. I mean, if you understand, you know, what you have to convey, it's natural. And mm-hmm. having that it's in an intimate theater, you can really be intimate when, you know, because I play such a conflicted character. And so to show the emotion on my face, you don't have to overdo right. so that, you know, the person in the.
And there are some intimate yeah, moments, exactly. if I remember correctly. There are some intimate moments in Nine, isn't
there? There are some intimate yeah. moments, too. Yes.
Is this for children? Yeah. Children
well, I would say they're for children.
When they're all grown up.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, if they're, you know, mature, and, you know, like if they're, a lot of their interactions are with adults, you know, they kind of have that kind of intellectual wherewithal to get what's going on.
It, you know, the thing that we were talking about, the Equity Waiver Theater, mm-hmm. the thing about DOMA and their work there renews the great hope that Los Angeles theater on that level is thriving mm-hmm. and being done well as it is done there. And
right.
that's the exciting part for me, because Los Angeles is a motion picture town and a television
exactly.
town. And theater seems to come under, you know, in third place there. And we work very hard at keeping, and that's what Paul and I do this for, we work very hard at keeping yeah. the live arts alive.
Correct.
As much as we can, at the Pantages, at the Amundsen, and the Mark Taper, and the larger theaters in town. But mostly, you know, what do we have, Paul? 100 Equity Waiver theaters
well, and
in
that's
town?
Just saying, and in wow. L.A., there's so much things. Like, it's all about driving. It's all about driving. Because in New York or Chicago, I'll take a cab, I'll meet you there, we'll go to the restaurant first, we'll walk over to the theater, we'll do all this. Mm-hmm. After a week of driving, which is what people in L.A. do, you just drive here, to ask people to then drive on their free time right. to go to a theater, right. to get mm-hmm. people out to the theater in L.A., as I've always said, is one of God's great mysteries.
Yes.
And but people are, when offerings like this exist, it's so nice to see that, you know, people are going out there and saying, I'm not going to do Netflix. Uh-huh. I'm going to actually get out. And to go back to the show that we saw Sister Act, you know, what we presented our niece with is nothing that we could have put into a DVD player. It's mm-hmm. just an event. It's a yeah. sense of event. It sounds
right.
like that's exactly what is happening at Nine, too.
Right, yes. And you know, and it's such a great cast. And, you know, they talk about how behind every successful man is, you know, a strong woman. Well, I have like 14 strong women. And each one a powerhouse in their own. Exactly, exactly. Oh, it's just incredible.
You know, David, when we have people on the show, we read a lot of promotional material and we read bios from people. But I have to say that your bio and your history is unusual compared to what we usually see. You were a former South Texas public school music teacher?
Yes.
Oh, that's true. And you currently serve as music minister at the Church of the Good Shepherd in Beverly Hills?
Correct.
How do you?
Oh, yes. Church.
That's got to be given the show that you're doing in the evening and what you're doing on Sunday morning. Are you a little
conflicted
there?
Especially the scene from a Call from the Vatican. Which yeah. had lovely Carol. Oh, she's a knockout. In more ways than one. But I did have a priest friend come see the show, and he was, you know, but he's got a BFA. Not that, you know, just because he's got that, but he was really impressed with the whole
production.
Oh, was he? Yes, yes,
oh,
yes.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
And I just, you know, because our bio has to be so long. I mean, there's other stuff that people would not even. I used to work in the prison system in Ohio. In the prison system. I was in the education department, and I was also in the psychology department.
What did you do in the prison system?
In the prison system, well, for the first year and 8 months, I was in a pre-release program, educational program that helped the guys that were just about ready to be released,
nice.
How to prepare themselves to go look for a job, how to develop right. their resume, how to do interviewing skills, and just job readiness preparation. And then for a year and 3 months, I worked in the psychologist department as I have a counseling degree, so everything wow. I did was under supervision of psychologists. So, and that was pretty interesting.
Wow.
That's a lot of fodder for theater.
Yeah.
Sure.
Exactly.
Was it scary at the same time?
Actually, no. I mean, I never felt threatened. A lot of the guys actually were very congenial uh-huh. and very polite, you know, sir, ma'am, whoever they were addressing, and yeah,
it's not like television. My mother is a correctional officer in a male prison,
yeah,
and
no.
I think about that all the time. I think about her safety, but she says, you know, people do bad things, but they're not bad people all the time.
Exactly.
And so you make friends, and if you respect them,
exactly. I was just gonna say it's how they're treated. They treat you that.
And a friend of mine used to go in and do secondary education in prison, and she said so much of the time they are the residents, inmates, the people there would are so grateful for the people who take their time and volunteer and come in to do that, that you, there's sort of a level of appreciation for that that
Definitely.
You know people don't think about that.
Right. Well, I mean, because I had a music background and there were a couple of guys that just loved to sing, I started a little choir. We put on a concert, and actually, not to brag, but I won that year the employee volunteer award that year.
That's
pretty cool.
Well, you should. That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Very nice.
Have you ever done that? I remember when I was in college, I went to we did scenes for Macbeth at a local prison in upstate New York. We did that.
I cannot say that I did.
No. There's an astounding story about Waiting for Godot, the first production of Waiting for Godot that they did, and they did it in Florida, and it bombed. It did terribly. And it wasn't at a prison yet. No, that's the point of the story. They just did it. That was the point of the story. They did it at a theater in Coconut Grove, and it just did terrible. And they told Samuel Beckett about it, and they said, perform it in a prison.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, bring Godot to a prison. And they brought it to San Quentin, and they did a production of it, and it changed the face of the prison. And to this day in San Quentin, they refer to different types of men as Gogos or Didis if they're Estragon or Vladimir, based on the two characters in that. That whole mindset of two tramps and what they're waiting for and their whole the sadness of their life and everything. It was made a hit because of this initial performance that took place in a prison. The cast was Burt Lahr and E.G. Marshall were the two people who did it. And it's addressed in Burt Lahr's autobiography. Fascinating story. Well, sorry to go off the track there.
No, but that reminds me also of the movie, I think it was Weeds, with Nick Nolte, where he's the playwright that's imprisoned, and he starts doing, you know, productions with the other inmates and stuff, and, you know, he gets in trouble because he starts plagiarizing or something like that.
Oh,
like,
no. Yeah. No, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
The arts, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
What do you think the film did for the musical Nine, by comparison to the actual stage production?
I have to apologize that I have not seen the movie, you know, other people in the cast have seen it, and they said it was kind of really hard to digest. Mm-hmm. I think it was just because of the style. So, you're talking about the musical with Daniel Day-Lewis?
Yes, yes.
Oh.
Not Eight and a Half.
Exactly. I didn't see that either. I didn't see that either, but, you know, so I can't really comment on that. I apologize. But, I think that because it was, you know, made into a movie, I think that kind of helps. Well, let me go check out the live version. That's all I could say about it.
Yeah, do that. I'd be curious because it, for me, I don't think it necessarily helped.
Did you see the film?
Yeah.
The Daniel Day-Lewis?
Yes.
Because I talked about four different people. I haven't seen it, but four different people all use the same word in describing it. They said disjointed.
Yeah,
and I don't know why.
I can see that because I mean, even our production, you know, some of the comments were like, you know, I didn't understand the concept of the opening sequence because it's practically a nine minute female vocal selection. But Marco's vision was that he's showing all of the movies of Contini, including the three that flopped. You know?
I tell you, though, if you're going to base something on a Fellini film, you have to expect a certain amount of, I don't understand
exactly,
that.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Just who Fellini was.
And, you know, a lot of what goes on is, you know, it's a lot in Guido Contini's mind, and you just get to see what's going on. Right. So it's kind of like, oh, when is it in his mind? When is it real?
And I don't think that by talking about the film, I don't think that it should at all be a deterrent from seeing the musical.
Exactly.
Because there's some wonderful, wonderful music in it, and obviously some great moments and performances that are very valuable.
And as always, it's a completely different animal. Like
of course.
Talked about Sister Act.
Absolutely.
The film is one thing, and the stage play is something completely different. Let's throw this information out there for people to see Nine. This is at the Doma Theater. Or at the Met Theater, being presented by Doma Theater Company. That's 1089 North Oxford Street in Los Angeles, 1089 North Oxford. And for tickets, you can go to domatheater.com. Theater is the R-E spelling, domatheater.com, or call 323-802-4990. That's 323-802-4990. And, Michael, do you have the Sister Act information to throw out there again?
Sorry to throw you on the spot there. Not at all. Pantages Theater now through the 28th of July, Tuesday through Friday at 8 p.m., Saturday 2 p.m. and 8 p.m., Sunday at 1 p.m. and their final performance, at least in Los Angeles, at 6:30 p.m.
Then after that, it's San Diego, and then what was the other one?
Costa Mesa.
Beautiful theater down there. And of course, folks, to purchase tickets for Sister Act, HollywoodPantages.com or Ticketmaster.com, or call 1-800-982-2787 or go to the beautiful box office. Pick them up.
Beautiful
there.
Lobby.
That's where I like to go pick up tickets.
I like to go across the street and have a martini at that
martini
hotel
at
bar.
There, yeah.
You sure you don't like to go to the Frolic Room?
Right, next door? Tell you. Go to the Frolic Room.
I've heard.
Gotta love a bartender with fresh stitches in his head. I love that. Did you see the Frolic Room in L.A. Confidential? You see the film L.A. Confidential?
No, I didn't see that.
Watch L.A. Confidential. It's a great scene with Kevin Spacey right there on the Frolic Room.
Is this
room.
The one that's
right
next
to it? It's right next to it.
Little din
of dingy delight.
Yeah.
And I hate to say this. I hate to say this because it's going to pull revenues from the Pantages bar, but you know that you can go into the Frolic Room and order your cocktail
for intermission.
Oh. And then you can just come out and go right up to the bar and have it. I've never done it, but
well,
I do have a friend.
That's lovely, but you can also do that at the Pantages.
You can do that
you
at
can.
The Pantages
you
as
can.
Well. Yes.
Yes, you can.
Just saying.
You can have
sometimes.
Hot tamales there. A friend of mine was at intermission. He says, do you know they have tamales at intermission?
I have tamales?
At the Pantages, he said.
Wow.
He was at
the show
last night.
Is he talking about the little candies, though?
No. He said, I'm enjoying these hot tamales
about
at intermission.
Mike and Ike's.
Or maybe he bought them in his bag and he had them in his pocket. And he was like, intermission, I'll take this tamale.
I know we've got a wide Latino population.
I know.
I was like, ooh, tamales.
I think you'd be aware of tamales.
It's always interesting to see what people are eating when they come back after intermission.
Michelle, is that correct?
What's that?
Oh, yeah. Okay, good.
We're talking to the publicist of the Pantages Theater in the room with us.
Okay. Come for the show, stay for the tamales,
exactly.
As they say.
Right.
Well, Michael, we got 5 minutes left. Shall we ask them the...
We're going to baptize you two right
you didn't
now.
Hear this little introduction, but we always like to end our show by asking people about something that went wrong during a performance of anything that they've ever done, an embarrassing on-stage moment. Taria might not share hers because she she touched on it in the lobby. She's like, you know what? I don't know if I'm going to share this because it may be a little
very
too embarrassing.
Oh,
well, believe me, we have heard everything,
yeah,
but we don't want to make
you
uncomfortable. Yeah. We can skip over it. Do you have one?
I have one.
Do you have one?
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
Well, wait a minute, but she's going to have to do it anyway.
No. Talk really slow. And put a song in there in the middle, maybe.
5, 6, 7.
Speaking of 5, 6, 7, 8, it was a production of Chorus Line.
Okay.
I was playing Anthony from Tempe, Arizona. And, there's that quick change at the very end before we do the big, full-out dance number. And so I had a female dresser for me. And here I am taking my clothes off and everything else. And she looks down and, I was wearing these underwears that had a little flap in front. And,
wow.
And it was cold backstage. And so anyway, she's just like looking, and I go, oh, sorry.
Yeah.
She helps me back zip on, and I just go right back on stage.
There you go.
See,
the life of a dresser.
Exactly.
This is when, you always know, especially if you're a male, you always know if your fly is open by how intensely people look you directly in the eyes.
Exactly. Because they're like, I'm not going to look down, I'm not going to look down.
Yeah. So I know when someone is staring through the back of my head, it's like, I bet my fly's dead. Because they're burning a hole in my forehead.
Exactly. Yeah.
That happened with our conductor. His name is Brent Allen Huffman, and he's very close to the stage. And there's one number in the show where I have like backup dancers and these boys in these little tight pants and low cut shirts. And my very good friend, his name is Deshaun Young, and he played Simba with me actually when we did Lion King on Broadway. The conductor is looking at him and he says, there's a quiet moment in the show, and he says, Deshaun, your fly is down. And I think that he really, really wanted him to get his fly up, but he didn't realize that it was at the quietest moment of the show, and the first three rows had to have heard him. So Deshaun is just, and we're frozen. It's like a dramatic moment, and we're frozen. And then the next moment, Deshaun turns his back to the audience, and he's like zipping up his pants. But, he meant well, but I think with the urgency in his voice, he didn't realize that everyone can hear you, B.A.
Now, speaking of the conductor for Sister Act, does the conductor become the guest at the end, or is that someone else?
That is the conductor.
That is the conductor. Okay.
I love that.
Yes.
Line.
I guess.
I just.
But you'll have to come to the show
exactly,
to see what we're talking about.
I don't want to. That's why I wanted to be vague about it. But that was very cool. It was very cool.
I would definitely want to see it.
Especially when we have a female conductor subbing in. That's always awesome.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
What a joy to have both of you with us today.
Pleasure. True pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Taking time off. And I know that you have a show tonight. Do you have a show tonight as well?
Tonight, no. No, we do three a night. Or three a weekend.
Three a night.
Lucky.
Three a night, yes. No.
Three a night. Three,
exactly.
Come to Sister Act. You should come to Sister Act.
Definitely, I will. I will.
Come to Sister Act and check out the tamales.
I sure will.
You really can't get better.
I'll move ahead, too.
What a pleasure having both of you
Absolutely.
On. It really was. And thanks to Mick Berry, who's doing
Yes, Mick Berry. Thank you, sir.
Keith Moon, The Real Me, is the URL for that show. That's
extended
in San Francisco.
Through the middle of August.
Yes, and check that one out. But and, of course, the other two we're talking about is Doma Theater Company's production of Nine at the Met Theater, and, of course, Sister Act at the beautiful Pantages. So we're grateful to both of our guests having both of you in
Thank
here.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
As always.
As always, see you on the radio.
See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.